Hello, everyone. I'm Eric D'Souza, and you're joining me again for another episode of Crime Writers of Canada's podcast, where we discuss all things crime fiction from authors from coast to coast. We have been chatting with all of the members of Crime Writers of Canada who have been shortlisted for the Awards of Excellence, and I had this date sort of circled in my calendar because we're talking today to Robin Harding. Hi, Robin. How are you?
I am well. Thank you for having me, Eric. Very excited to be here.
That's two of us then. So Robin has been nominated for the Peter Robinson Award for Best Crime Novel sponsored by Rakuten Kobo. And just like 2 minutes before you came on, a kind of weird coincidence occurred to me. You lost to Peter Robinson, I believe, in 2018. For the author of his best crime book. And now you're going for his namesake award.
Oh, wow. He, not only did he win, and now he has the award named after him. I'm feeling like a loser.
Well, you never know. Maybe one day it'll be the Robin Harding Award.
That's funny. I was very honored the first time with the party when it was nominated. And I actually didn't remember. I knew I didn't win, but I didn't remember who won. So that is funny. And I'm so excited and honored again to have the Drowning Woman nominated.
Well, let's say a little bit about you. Robin is from Vancouver, best known or best-selling novelist with novels including The Perfect Family, The Arrangement, Her Pretty Face, and, as we mentioned, The Party. Before becoming a novelist, she worked as an advertising executive and a screenplay writer. And you know I'm going to have to ask about that, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. Let's start with the book. I'm a writer myself, and I often think I really should write a thriller. They're very popular right now. And then I just get stuck because I can't think of anything new. they've been done, like, so many things. And often when I'm even reading a thriller, it just reminds me of another thriller. Mm-hmm. I can't say that about The Drowning Woman. From beginning to end, you even surprised me, which is really hard to do. So could you tell me a little bit of where you came up with this inspiration, or the inspiration behind this original idea?
Yeah, thank you. I'm really glad to hear that I got you a couple times. I think what is really unique about The Drowning Woman is the way I tell it. It's more the structure that is unique than the concept. I mean, the concept is hopefully unique, but I really wanted to tell it in a way that was sort of inspired by a film I saw, a Korean film called The Handmaiden by Park Chan-wook. And it's a story where you're watching the first part of the movie and you think you know what is going on. And then they go, part two, here's what was really going on from someone else's perspective. And then part three, oh my God, something else was really going on. So I just love that structure so much. And I had the sort of the concept for The Drowning Woman, these two unlikely women from, you know, suffering in very opposing ways brought together. But I wanted to kind of think, have readers think they know what's going on from the main character Lee's perspective, and then switch in part two to Hazel's perspective, and something entirely different is going on, unbeknownst to Lee. So I had a lot of fun with writing it that way.
And I had a lot of fun reading it that way. It's clever also. It's part of the storytelling is when you tell certain things, especially in a thriller or even any mystery, is when you reveal that information. And like I said, you surprised me a few times. So I enjoyed it very much. I wanted to talk about some of your characters, and I'm going to bring back a character from a previous book, from Her Pretty Face. And these characters kind of happen quite a lot in thrillers nowadays. It's the mother, Frances, who will do anything for their family. In her case, her troubled son. And she goes to great lengths to protect her son. But in this book, Lee is the opposite. So in The Drowning Woman, Lee is alone, completely alone, by herself, living in her car. Which of those scenarios do you find the scariest to write about?
Jeez. So one thing I have to admit is that I am never scared when I'm writing. I think because I have all the control, right? So I get asked that all the time, like, have you ever scared yourself? And I'm like, no, I never scare myself because I can just stop. I can twist and you know, I can be the villain. I can put myself in the shoes of, you know, whichever character I want. So I don't actually feel scared. But You know, thinking about those two scenarios, I mean, I can't imagine being a homeless woman, how vulnerable anyone who is unhoused is, let alone a woman. But, you know, as a mother, I've never felt so vulnerable until I had kids. Like, I used to be like a daredevil. I'd be like, oh, yeah, I'll do it. I'll bungee jump. I'll zip line. And now I'm like, no, I'm a mother. Something could happen to me. And then my kids don't have me. And so I feel like there's this real fierceness that mothers have, especially when their kids are young, and protectiveness that Frances in her pretty face definitely has.
The other character you write about in this book is Hazel. And you just said you don't get scared. And maybe scared is not the right feeling for Hazel, because she's the drowning woman. And I don't want to say too much. I'll let you talk about her. But as a writer, you needed to get into her head, and you needed to, you know, understand what it was like to live in her shoes. Maybe scared is not the right word, but it must have been uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm not sure what the word is, sort of disturbed. It's a pretty violent marriage that she is trapped in, with some very heavy, demanding constraints in her relationship. And so, you know, people ask me, where did you come up with that? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I was just trying to do something I haven't done before at this point. Explore some kind of toxic dynamic that that felt like something new and interesting and intriguing. But yeah, it was a very toxic kind of thing. And my editor actually said, like, you know, go easy, be careful with that, because it is really quite upsetting. So, you know, I wanted to handle it as delicately as possible.
I didn't feel you were going very easy on us. As I mentioned, I think, did 7 years as an advertising executive. I studied marketing myself, and I know you kind of, as a writer, as an artist, have to wear two hats. So when you start a project, do you approach it sort of as a business, thinking about things like demographic, like 30-year-old women are going to love this? Or do you allow your creativity to write a story and you let your agent and your publisher do the marketing?
Well, it's funny when you say my advertising career, it feels like such a blip. You know, so at the time it felt like, oh, you know, the 7 years, and now it feels like nothing. I've been writing for 20 years. So, you know what, though? I think it is there in the back of my mind. I mean, creativity and a story that I want to spend a year of my life writing, something that interests me enough. And it's usually something that I would want to read. But, you know, I think there is a little bit of business person in me after this many books, 13 books or what have you. You know, I want to make sure that it is, again, something that hasn't been done. Hopefully, you never know what could be in the works with somebody else, and something that, you know, is appealing to the marketplace. Or, you know, I mean, I write, like I say, things that I want to read. And I'm hoping that there's enough people that share those interests. But, you know, I don't think about a marketing plan or anything like that. I just am trying to, just find an idea that if it engages me, I'm hoping it will engage others as well.
I've also been fortunate enough to interview several screenplay writers who started to write novels. And even people in the movie industry or television industry who also write novels. And they approach it, some of them approach it visually, like they see it as they're writing it, like, oh, when they film this, I'm going to make it easy. Like, this is how it's going to look. A lot of screenplay writers often look at the dialogue a lot. Dialogue's important to them. I'm assuming dialogue's important to you looking at your work. So is the screenplay writer in you still there? Is the structure of a screenplay still there in you?
Absolutely. I should clarify that I was a novelist, then I was a screenplay writer, then I became a novelist again after realizing how hard it is to be a screenwriter. I mean, how hard it is to make any money as a screenwriter. But yeah, I learned so much doing that, taking that shift. I mean, it really is a different kind of, it's a craft, and your mind has to kind of kick into a different way of seeing versus telling. So I still use that. I feel like ever since I did screenwriting and now I've gone into the thriller world, it's been super helpful. The structure really helps with pacing, you know, trying to keep, you know, there's certain plot points that have to be hit at a certain time. And I think that's especially important in thrillers. Dialogue has always been my favorite thing to write. So, you know, I just love the immediacy of it. And that's what I liked about screenwriting, actually, is that so quickly you're into the good bits, you know, whereas for me anyway, because that's what I love to do. But yeah, I think I do see scenes like, you know, I would never be so presumptuous to say when this is a film, they'll film it here. And, you know, I know that business. But I do kind of see each chapter or each scene as, you know, imagine if this was a movie, how is this moving the plot forward? How is this, you know, adding to the story and deepening the characters and that kind of thing. Super helpful.
I've heard you say when writing dialogue, you read it back to yourself. I wonder if now you've done one step more. Did you listen to your audiobook? That's actually how I read your Drowning Woman, audiobook. And some books just work really good on audio, including yours. Have you listened to your own?
You know what? I have not. And so many people say that is really valuable to do. I have listened to like samples and little bits of it, but I have not listened to the whole thing. And a few writers have said to me that it's actually like a really learning experience to listen to your book being kind of read to you, but it just sort of feels kind of weird also. Like, so I haven't done it. I'm actually not an audiobook person, but now that Spotify, you can get 15 hours or something with your plan, I might try to get into that. I feel like I have two dogs and I do a lot of walking. And so that might be a good time to do it. But I feel like I get so scattered in my head. My head is busy. I'm, you know, working out other stories. And so sometimes my focus is not what it should be. So, but I'd like to try.
Yeah, me personally, I just stopped watching as much TV and just replaced it with audiobooks. Because I have to keep up with all these great Canadian writers like yourself.
That's right. Yeah, you would be very busy.
Well, that's sort of run out of questions for you, but I do know that The Haters, your next book, is coming out in July 2nd. So do you want to talk about The Haters at all?
There it is. Yeah, so this one is actually set in Vancouver. And, you know, it's quite a personal story because it is about a writer, but she's a debut author. She's brand new to the business and thinks my dream has come true until she gets this very disturbing email accusing her of doing something really awful in her book, exploiting kids that she's a school counselor and she's accused of exploiting these kids. And it soon becomes quite evident that someone is out to destroy her personally, professionally, in every way. And she has to find out who. So that's coming out July 2nd. And yeah, I'm really excited about it. I had a lot of fun. It was really nice to set something in Vancouver. You know, I could give the city some personality. And, you know, I know it so well. I've lived here for so long. And yeah, and then the insight into what it's like being an author, some sort of the ugly side. Luckily, nothing this terrible has ever happened to me as happens in The Haters. But I've had some pretty unpleasant messages, I will say, about my books over the years, which is crazy. And I think most writers have. Yeah, so that's the internet.
Sorry, a quick follow-up because I can't help myself. Did you get kickback at all or resistance from setting your book in Vancouver or Canada in general?
So it's funny. I'm now with Hachette, Grand Central. And I had a very tight timeline for The Haters. And I basically said to her, I don't have time to research a new city. I want to set this in Vancouver. There's no reason not to set it in Vancouver. She goes, yeah, Vancouver's great. But when I was with Simon & Schuster in the US, Gallery Books, my former editor would not let me. She would not let me set books in Canada. And I mean, some of the mean emails I have got are from people giving me heck for not setting it in Canada. And I was like, I want to. So I hope that, I don't think anyone will be too put off by the setting. I think that, I mean, Vancouver's a great city. I love it. I think it's not exactly an unrelatable location. You know, it's got all the problems that all big cities have. So, you know, I think it makes for a good backdrop.
Excellent. I'm so happy. Well, I'm going to wish you the best of luck. I tell everyone, I don't know who the winners are yet. So when I wish you best of luck, I truly do mean it. Good luck. And
when you know early, just let me know. Hey?
I can know anytime. They want to tell me. And I'm like, no, I can't talk to, really? I can't talk to people.
They already know? Oh, my
they
God.
Know, yes. They're setting up promotions and stuff.
yeah. And all the other nominees, they're friends and they're amazing writers. And three of us from BC, which is quite interesting. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Nice to chat with you, Eric. Thanks for having me.